David Wilcock is a professional lecturer, filmmaker, and researcher of ancient civilizations, consciousness science, and new paradigms of matter and energy. Identified as an intuitive empath with precog abilities, Corey Good was recruited through one of the MyLab programs at the young age of six. Good trained and served in the MyLab program from 1976 to 1986-87 for 20 years. Toward the end of this time at MyLab, he was assigned to an IE support role for rotating Earth delegate seats shared by secret Earth government groups in the human-type ET Super Federation Council. Good is now in direct physical contact with the Blue Avians of the Sphere Being Alliance, who have chosen him as a delegate to interface with multiple ET federations and councils on their behalf, liaison with the SSP Alliance Council, and to deliver important messages to humanity. Tonight is a very special evening. I want everybody to be comfortable, share the knowledge, go and learn and question everything after tonight's show. I would like to welcome to the program Mr. David Wilcock and Corey Good. How are you tonight, gentlemen?
Very good.
Doing well. Thank you.
Okay. let's see. David, for everybody, it sounds like David's going to be a little in the background sounding, and Corey's going to be the forceful guy in front. Are you guys ready?
Sounds good to me.
That'll be the reverse.
Yeah. Well, you know, check this out, guys. We anticipated this being a big program, and tonight, right before the show, we literally blew up our servers, which are cleared for 100,000 hits at any one time. And our servers are back up and running. Everything is good. You know, we have other networks that are picking up the feed. But our main server, you guys blew it up tonight. Congratulations. There's a first time for everything. You got to love it, right?
We get hero points for that, I guess.
Yeah, well, you guys do. And thank you. Now, I did announce before the show, and I want everybody to understand a couple of things. We have been working on getting this show done for months, and it is has been the number one requested show. We have gotten so much email. Part of that being the stuff that you guys have done over at Gaiam and the presentations on your websites. And the anticipation of this is you can feel it. It's palpable. So, but I want the audience to know we have worked on this really hard. We haven't ignored anybody. David hasn't. Corey hasn't. Tonight is the first opportunity that we've had to be able to get the stars and the moon to align. And thank you guys both for making tonight happen.
Thank you.
Okay. I'm happy to be here. This is only the second time we've done a joint radio show. The first one was on Open Your Mind Ireland. And so I feel like we can accomplish a lot here if we focus and don't get too distracted by all the side tangents that can be caused in discussing this stuff. But
absolutely. And, you know, okay, I'm going to start this evening off with a couple of disclaimers, and we'll get all of this out of the way so we can just have a wide open evening. First off, Corey, this is your first time on the show. So every time I have a first-time guest, I say the following words. It's just you, David, and I sitting on my couch in my living room having a conversation. We're going to start as friends. It's going to go where it goes, and we're going to end as friends. Are you ready?
How many cigarette butts are in the couch, exactly?
Yeah, exactly. So that's the first disclaimer. And the second, I want to get a couple of things out of the way. One, we had a long conversation earlier today, and there is so much to discuss. There are so many questions out there from everybody. You guys have done your best to present all of this information as well as you can. Tonight, I'm going to do my best to inform all of our listeners and have them, you know, sitting like they're sitting with us and participating in the conversation. And that's where we're going to go. I want to start here. I have two questions that are both very important. The first one is, how did you two meet? That's the first question. And the second question, I want to dovetail into this, is, Corey, you were gone for 20 years. And being gone for 20 years, looking back, this is the internet age. Anybody can check out anybody's background. Where does the internet or your history say that you have been for the last 20 years? So let's start there. How did you guys meet?
As far as I can remember, and what I've documented in my show, Wisdom Teachings on Gaia TV, is that Corey first emailed me in November 2009. I took photographs of the emails, blocking out certain personal details, including the addresses, but I did put that in the show. As far as I know, I was the first public figure that Corey contacted, and he did share with me an interesting bit of insider information all the way back then, which we've been asked to withhold for certain reasons of confidentiality.
Sure.
It wasn't anywhere near as big as the stuff that he's saying now, but it was significant.
Was it enough for you, David, to go, holy crap?
It validated several things that I'd heard from others, and it was pretty shocking. Yeah. And I believed that he was telling me the truth because he knew too many things that people shouldn't know unless he saw what he claimed to have seen.
Is it something that you can reveal now?
I just said that I cannot.
Okay. Well, yeah, but I'm gonna be me, David. Good to be me. I'm going to ask one more time before the show's out, I promise. Okay.
But again, it's something you could find on the internet. Lots of people have written about this particular issue. He just happened to have very precise specifics about it that were not online.
Right.
And I'm like saying, how does this guy know this stuff? So we continue to exchange email from there on. And, you know, sometimes he was writing me and I didn't respond because I've been really, really busy for many years. He then started to do forum work and then eventually circled back around and wrote me a very shocking email in October of this past year, 2014, and said that he had been working in the secret space program. And the first email was pretty cryptic, but I realized that he was probably onto something. So when we began talking, it turned into Skype calls pretty quickly. And I realized that this guy knows hundreds of things that, as far as I know, no other UFO figure on Earth has heard this from insiders, because I have insiders that nobody else has spoken to. And some of the insiders that have spoken to others have told me a whole lot of things that they did not share with anybody else. So we're starting to deal with a very, very huge story that, up until Corey came forward, no one had ever put online, no one had access to. I was quietly keeping it to myself, and I'd never expected any of this stuff was going to make it online.
Corey, with those 20 years that you know, from 1976 to 1986-87, what does public access information say about that time period, about yourself personally?
That actually will... The 20 and back program is what we're referring to. And people that are familiar with some other people that have come forward know, I guess, of others that have talked about the programs, to where people sign up for or are drafted into programs to where they serve for 20 years. And at the end of that 20 years, they are, on this program, this is not going to sound extremely wild, but they are age regressed and time regressed and brought back to the time that they began the service. So that's from the time I left to the time I served, and then the time I served the 20 years and then came back, only maybe, 6 to 8 minutes had passed in the real time timeline that we would see.
And is your own mind, Corey, and help me out on this if I don't ask the question the right way, your own mind is still linear? In other words, the 20 years is still there, right? Yeah, and you remember all
yes.
of it, but...
Well, they make you a whole lot of promises that they don't intend to keep. They promise you will never have to pay for college. You'll have a very comfortable life when you come back and go into a mainstream life. And they never intend on keeping the promises they make to you, because at the end of the 20 years of service, when they bring you back to the Lunar Operation Command facility and take you to the area to where they age regress you, which is a long process. They have to keep you totally immobile and almost in a comatose state for, I'm told, approximately 2 weeks for them to process of regressing you back to your to the age you were when you started off. They also do what they call blank slating, which is they mind wipe you. And this is it's fairly effective in most cases, but 3 to 5% of people, the blank slating, especially what they were, the blank slating techniques they were using in the 70s and 80s, 3 to 5% of the people, it didn't work properly. And often they were intuitive empaths, and
Corey, let me stop you there, because we're going to start to get ahead of ourselves. So, but what I wanted to do was set the stage for, this is for a lot of people that have never heard your story, is going to be a lot for them to absorb. So in some instances, we need to, you know, try to break this down and,
sure.
And so let's back up. Okay. So 20 years, 1976, 1986, 87, you were in the MyLab program, and you were regressed and brought back. Okay, so now we understand how that happened. Now let's go ahead. What is the MyLab program?
Well, I've learned that a lot of people have a lot of preconceived ideas that MyLab equals super soldier. Program, which is one of the programs that falls under the MyLab umbrella and the programs. There are hundreds of different programs. MyLab is a term that was coined, I believe, back in the 90s, and it's just short for military abduction. And the military abductions can be for any number of things. People that have been abducted by extraterrestrials, they can be what they call MyLabbed. The military abducts them to find out why ETs are interested in them. People can be MyLabbed or abducted on a short-term basis, a one-time basis, or a long-term basis if they are brought into some of these programs that that they use to train people from a very young age for what they're going. They'll identify people at a very young age that have what they call gifts or what they consider special. And they want to get them at a young age before the real world comes in and tells them certain things are not possible. And
I see. So MyLab, which it should be MIL-AB, right? Military abduction, as opposed to like military laboratory. You know, so MyLab is military abduction.
MILAB is how you'll see it spelled on the internet, all caps.
And what made you so special? Did they tell you, or did you know in advance?
Well, that's a buzzword, the special word.
Sure it is.
You know, they use that word to try to pump up your ego, even at a very young age, to tell you, you're special, you have a preordained mission in this life, and we're helping you to make the best of that. And there's a whole lot of propaganda that they use to try to get you to usually do their bidding, I was having weird experiences early on, at the age of six, I had been identified through testing in public schools, that through some standardized testing, even way back then, and I had been identified as an intuitive empath. And
what is an intuitive empath?
Well, if you're empathic, you feel other people's emotions. You have a very strong connection to other people emotionally. You will know what another person is feeling, and you can have a connection with them. And then once you learn how to use that, you can then begin to understand what they are thinking, why they may be feeling that way. Intuitive is self-explanatory. You have a very strong intuition.
Did you know that you had these abilities at the age of six?
You really don't understand that kind of thing when you're at that age. That's at the age to where you take that kind of thing for granted. That's before your parents beat that kind of thing out of you. That's not possible. That's not scientific. That's before the world gets a hold of you and takes all of your, faith and the magical things in life away.
And David, you can jump in here because I actually want your insight on this, but you made a couple of statements, Corey, about the amount of people that were on the Manta Ray, the Stingray ship. It held, I think the number was like 600. That's an extraordinary, it seems to me, a large amount, not only to be on a ship, but just in general in the program. Was everybody on that ship 6 years old?
No, and that was the capacity of the ship, and it also that it could hold up to 600 people, and it also could be, it's kind of modular in a way to where it could be configured to transport cargo also.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
Well, I'm just trying to get a grasp of the amount of other people in the program. If there were 600 on the ship, there's no telling how many are going to be there when you arrived or how many have been, recruited before you got there. It seems like an extraordinarily large number. Do either of you have an idea of what that number is?
Well, this program was already quite large. There were already, many hundreds of thousands of people that were in these programs. If you remember, David, help me. When did the brain drain begin? Was it in the 50s?
It started in the 1950s, and according to my insider, Pete Peterson, who is willing to go forward with this publicly, it was actually 60 million people. And what they did is they pulled the best and brightest scientific minds and their families from countries all over the world, These people told their whoever their friends were that they were going to work overseas in a foreign assignment. They would write a series of postcards before they left, and then those postcards would be mailed over the course of about 5 years, after which time it would just dry out, and then their friends would never hear from them again. And in this way, they were able to populate this space program with a very large number of people who are all now mandated to have kids as soon as they get to be old enough.
Now, to somebody that's listening to this for the first time, I'm going to ask both of you the same question. What kind of evidence would you guys put forward to support this? We're speaking to an audience, two different people listening, one that are familiar with everything that we're talking about right now, and then there's the other that are hearing this for the first time, and they are saying really loud right now, okay, but where's the evidence? So how do you respond to that?
I would start with asking them questions, okay? Roswell happened 70 years ago. Would you be listening to the show if you didn't believe that the United States government, at the very least, got access to extraterrestrial disks that they could fly? If they can fly them, why wouldn't they go into space? If they can go into space, why wouldn't they build something? If they can build something, why wouldn't they send people there? If they can send people there, why wouldn't eventually one of them come forward? That's what's happened.
And Corey? Same question.
Well, as far as the brain drain goes, I think there's been quite a lot of evidence put forth that that many, many people of scientific and engineering backgrounds disappeared basically off the face of the earth back in the 50s. And again, and it happened in waves going even up into the 80s. So I don't think really that's really up for debate. I mean, David, do you have hasn't that pretty much been established?
Well, yeah, and I'll also point out that if you have a Netflix account, you can go on there and watch a television show called Ascension, which absolutely blew my mind. I have documented records of Pete Peterson telling me about two space probes that were sent out, and that the name of the scientist that developed these probes was Ensman. And I won't say his first name because it's different than the one they used in the show, but the last name was the same. And in the show Ascension, they talk about the brain drain, and they talk about the idea also that certain people are put out as plants online so that if you start to find out the truth, you will be steered towards certain websites, and those sites are actually controlled by people who are deliberately finding out who knows the truth and shutting them down, sometimes lethally. So the television show Ascension is a story about the secret space program, a group of people who think they're in space, and nothing has changed since the 1960s for them. There is a preponderance of evidence that has been collected about the brain drain. A lot of that work was done many years ago, so it's pre-internet era, but you can still, if you're a diligent researcher, find lots and lots of data about that. As far as the broad stroke portrait of the secret space program itself, these people have done an incredibly good job of keeping it secret. And one of the things that I like to say is the Manhattan Project was what developed the atomic bomb. It employed 140,000 people, and it went on for 6 years. And until the bomb actually went off, no one squealed, no one leaked it, none of those people came forward, the public didn't know anything about it, and it was a vast operation. So
yeah,
it is.
There's so many examples of that, David. You're absolutely right. The SR-71, the F-117, all of those air. We didn't know about it until they wanted us to know.
Absolutely.
Yeah, there's no question about that.
So anybody who says, well, I'm a skeptic and the government can't even hide a file in a file cabinet. No. You got to understand here. this is not a file in a file cabinet. We're talking about a very, very vast program where they wanted to make absolutely sure that the public would never find out about this. So once you get brought into space, and this is a key thing I hope we'll get Corey to talk about, you are a slave. You are not coming back. You're done.
Understood. Hey, guys, we're up against one break. Let's take this, and then we'll do the next hour commercial-free. But when we come back, Corey, whistleblowers are supposed to be faceless and nameless, and certainly that has ended with you. So when we come back after the break, I want to ask Corey what it's like to be a whistleblower with a face and a name. That can't be the easiest life to deal with. And we'll do all of that when we come back. Hey, okay, let's put our serious hats on. This is some serious things to discuss. Corey, whistleblowers are supposed to be faceless, nameless, and protected. You got outed. We don't need to go into that. That's in the past. But how has that changed your life?
Well, it hasn't been easy. I have a wife and two children. It has affected a career that I had that allowed me to provide for them. I was able to provide a very comfortable life for them, and it affected that career dramatically. And
have you been followed? I don't want to make light of this, but have you been followed? Any mysterious cars outside of the house, clicking on the phones? Just that basic frightening stuff. Any of that going on?
I've had incidents of people approaching me, telling me that I shouldn't talk so much, that I have a big mouth. Spoke about this incident in my first or second audio interview. A person approached me when I was at a restaurant, and I've even had my very own public stalkers who, after I was outed, I hadn't had the opportunity to take the security measures I would like to, and they were able to find out where I lived.
Right.
And,
right.
You know, I went out to my mailbox and found I had a note and a bullet in my mailbox. And needless to say, after that, my children used to argue over who got to check the mail.
Right.
After that incident, children don't get to check the mail anymore.
Well, Corey, but when you flew out to see me for the first time and we were going to tape your interview, guy in the airport offered you a shot of Jägermeister.
Yes. I didn't know if we were going to talk about this one, but
I think we should. I think we should.
Okay. What happened?
I was at, I believe it was TGI Fridays at Love Field in Dallas, airport in Dallas, and my flight was being perpetually
delayed,
and it was crazy. So I went finally. I sat at the bar at I believe TGI Fridays, and I was sitting there having a beer and trying to unwind after dealing with the airlines. And this guy comes up and sits next to me. And as I paid for my beer, he saw my Texas State Guard military ID. And he said, "Oh, you're military. I want to buy you a drink." And I was you know, he ordered Jägermeisters, and I said, I don't drink hard liquor. I don't want it. And he put his hand over the top of the shot glass and slid it over in front of me and said, no, do a shot with me. And I was like, I don't drink hard liquor. And this young guy that was sitting next to me that was drinking beer said, I'll take it. And I said, sure. And I slid it right over to him. And the guy tensed up that bought me the drink. And the young guy, I mean, he looked barely old enough to drink, took the shot.
No. Baldy also said, no, that's for him. That's for him.
Yeah. And, he protested, but the kid just took the shot, and he had just finished a big meal, and the kid was sitting there, and just like moments after he takes a shot, he just projectile vomits.
Oh, man.
I mean, as if almost like it was Epicac in the glass instead of Jägermeister.
What happened to the guy that bought the drink? Did he disappear?
He disappeared into the crowd, and I never saw him again. He just disappeared. So
yeah, let that be a lesson to you. You know, unless it's either David or I buying you the drink, that's you politely decline everything from here on out. Well, okay, now let's start.
Jimmy, I'll just also kick in quickly that
sure,
I have had numerous severe death threats, including personal death threats from the Rothschilds to me through four different sources, saying that if I keep doing this, they're going to try to take me out. And they would if they could. And that's one of the things that we got to say for all the skeptics out there is this is a spiritual battle. And the good guys that are in this battle are what you could think of as the archangels, seraphim, and cherubim in the Bible. And so if you follow positive spiritual practices, these threatening things can happen that are scary, but they can't actually take you out.
Well, let me just say this. If you stop getting those emails or those warnings or those drinks or whatever, then that means you don't matter. Always remember that. If I stop getting emails, because I get 10 a day, you know, we're going to shut down your show. We're going to shut down your website. You need to stop. You know what? That just means we're on pitch. That's all that means, you know? And so always remember that. If you stop getting the emails, that's when you worry. Okay? As long as you get them, that just means that you matter. And that being said, Corey, tell me how, back when you were 6 years old, for the audience, and it's just an amazing event. How did you get from Texas to the LOC? Oh, by the way, audience, we're going to be talking about the LOC. We'll tell you what that is. The ICC. We'll get into that. We'll get into the Super Federation. All of that will be explained. Fear not. So we're going to start here with your first trip from Texas to the LOC. What happened that day?
Well, that the trips off world didn't start until later on. When I was six, they would bring me to Carswell Air Force Base and a couple other locations that were usually closed down or abandoned commercial real estate buildings that they took our group to. To do training and testing, and this training and testing was to get this group of children as they were growing up to a point to where we would all be drafted off into various different programs. Some of us would go into the secret space program, some of us would go into military black ops, and some of us would go to work for some of these syndicates that people call the Cabal and the Illuminati.
Mm-hmm. And so, and from Carswell, weren't you transported underground? I don't want to put words in your mouth, but
yes.
So tell me how that went.
Yes, there. I don't want to bring this. I've received emails from a few people that worked at the base during that time frame, and I described the back gate that we entered in through, drove, crossed a runway, and then drove parallel to a runway, and then we drove into a hangar where cars parked, and on the wall was a giant wooden model that had Corsair written on it, and it was a giant bomber on it. And then we would, I was told that by one of these people that it was a security or one of the headquarters buildings. We walked back to the back, and there was a large service elevator that took us down a few floors, and then we were in a kind of, during that time frame was the Cold War, and in case of nuclear attacks, they had below ground facilities. And then we would walk down a series of halls, one of which was guarded, a couple of doors that were guarded, and by one man sitting at a table, one soldier or airman. And then we'd pass through those doors and go, and there would be further elevators that would take you deeper down, and that would take you down to the underground tram system.
Was it the same time or the same steps every single time? Was it always the Carswell, the same hallways, same elevators? Did you ever go to a different facility, or was it always?
No, that they would take us to different buildings quite often, and a lot of the times they were larger commercial buildings that were not in use, that they had set up for, had their equipment set up in for training or testing, different, whatever scenario they needed them for. And locations could be closer to where we lived. I lived in the North Dallas area, so it was always about a 50-minute drive to Carswell Air Force Base. So it was a little bit of a drive when they would take us in the vans. And so they had facilities that I guess were mobile, that they could move around and set up in different commercial buildings that they had access to, and they would make use of those that were closer to different groups.
Were you transported underground outside of the state of Texas, or do you think that you were always inside of Texas?
No, we were definitely transported outside of Texas. There were no signs that said you here or there, but there would be a dramatic change in people's accents and demeanors and looks. So there were times that we definitely seemed to be in places like Australia or Europe and or under Europe and Australia, and one of the things that was mentioned, I remember mentioned when I was young, was that you know how like out at sea a certain amount of miles from shore. It's international waters that international there's no national laws that you have to worry about. It's international laws. The same goes for a certain depth underground, and a certain amount of depth underground you go, you're not considered in that country anymore.
Oh, that's interesting. I never quite looked at it that way, but I suppose the same would apply. Yeah. If you're in the ISS, what country are you in? I never even thought about that. That's a good point. Corey, so your first trip off-world, tell us about that, and where do you think you were when that happened?
Well, before I was actually somewhat drafted, although I did sign papers before I was legally old enough to, I was already being utilized as an intuitive empath, and I had been brought to off-world to these Super Federation meetings in a support role, to where I was there with two other. There was always three intuitive empaths. They always had three of us to triangulate for triangulation purposes, and they had us at the Super Federation conference because the Earth. We finally, I guess this is going a little bit. Human beings of Earth finally got a delegation seat at the Super Federation. Many of the ET groups there did not like this, were not approving of this, but nonetheless, it was a delegation role that many of these different secret Earth government leaders would rotate into. And there would be a delegate that would rotate in and sit in the chair, and then there would be always three intuitive empaths, and we would rotate in as well. So I wasn't always there. They would rotate us in, and we would sit to the side and to the front of this delegate. And then the delegate had an advisor that would stand over their left shoulder, and that would be the delegation group that would be allowed on the floor.
Where did this delegation meet?
It was on a it's a space station, a very advanced space station that is inside of a temporal rift or temporal bubble. And we would have to fly into it. It was out by the gas giants, out in the around the orbits of the gas giants.
Neptune, Uranus,
mm-hmm.
Jupiter. Okay, well, okay, let's back up, though. I want to know how you got there. We jumped ahead. We jumped way ahead. Okay. So how did you get there? That's
okay.
That's where we were.
Okay. Now we're going to get to where we start first going to the LOC. We would be portaled to the LOC through the there were the underground tram system that would portal us, and there was also a area that they would take us to through the underground tram system that you would walk through. But both of them would end up at the LOC, where you would then get in to a spacecraft, embark onto a spacecraft, and then fly from the LOC to this temporal rift or bubble that pretty much hid or protected this.
No, I understand. And the LOC is the Lunar Operation Command. That's what, or center, command center.
Right.
How long were you there before you were transported out? Did you spend a month there, a day there, an hour?
No, these were short trips. These would be like the meetings would be anywhere from like 3-5 hours, to including the meeting and the travel time.
So
would be like I guess you would call it a day trip.
A day trip. So what was the atmosphere like? I'm picturing, you know, the commander up talking to an audience, you know, a classroom, a room, kind of like the movie Top Gun. You know, I'm kind of picturing that, where you're being addressed on what this mission is going to be. Did you have, cafeterias? What was the daily life like there? How were you treated when you were there?
When we were at the LOC?
Yes.
Well, when we were at the LOC, at this point, we were just escorted directly to the craft. We, as intuitive empaths in a support role, we were not given any information. We were there just to detect any type of, deception or danger. And when we were there, when we were at the Super Federation conferences, we didn't understand anything that was going on. We didn't understand. We had no idea what was going on.
Why was that? Was there a language barrier? Something lost in translation?
Yes. The beings that were there didn't interface with us directly, which is what they call telepathic one-on-one communication. And there was also a common language that was spoken that was very monotone, very strange language that each delegate, when they would rotate up to the podium and talk, they all spoke this language, while there was another being that stood up and did some strange sort of sign language that looked almost like Native American sign language. It was very peculiar. And we would sit there and hold these devices in our hands that just looked like a piece of plexiglass.
Mm-hmm.
And they were called smart glass pads. And you would put them on your hands, and you could see your fingertips through them, and they were activated with consciousness or with a mental component. And then they would go opaque, and then whatever language you speak, you would begin to see information appearing in that language, and you would have access to a database of information, and they would have us browsing this database of information to keep our conscious mind busy and also gathering information from the database while our subconscious mind or higher self and training kicked in, so that our intuitive empath abilities were picking up anything in the room that we should be picking up.
That's interesting. I'm picturing something like the United Nations, right, where you have all of
exactly.
these different cultures together. Were you, did you have some type of headset or some type of translation device?
Nope.
What about everybody else? Were they all speaking the same language, or was somebody translating for them?
What is interesting is I did not know until quite recently, when I got to sit in one of those chairs myself, that when you sit in that chair, you understand the language that is being spoken.
Ah, I got you. And what were they? This is one of the crucial things I've always wanted to ask you. What was it that they were discussing? Were they discussing issues in the universe, or were they discussing Earth?
They were discussing this grand experiment, which we are a major part of. And of this group, there was usually 40 there. Sometimes there were more, up to 60, a little over 60 different beings, groups there, and that were working together. And they had 22 different programs that, since our inception, or some would say our creation, they have been genetically engineering and altering us. They have been interfering in our social and spiritual affairs.
Mm-hmm.
And they are also a part of this grand experiment. They, some of these groups are incarnating into our society, into human bodies, and they're very much a part of this huge what is called the grand experiment. And this is the overall topic of this experiment.
Sure. Was the same experiment that they are doing here? Are they doing it also on other off-world planets? Is the same thing being replicated across the universe? We're just a small piece of it?
From what I had gathered, this grand experiment is very important to the rest of our galaxy and other galaxies. But I do not know for certain if they are repeating the same experiment. I don't see why they wouldn't on other in other star systems.
Were you ever able to intermingle or communicate with any other species?
Not when I was in that role. When I was in that role, I was oblivious to what was going on. When they would take us back, we would go through debriefing.
Mm-hmm.
And the debriefing was very bland because, I mean, we really didn't know much. And then we were sent back. We served our purpose.
Were you? Okay.
Later on, when I became a delegate myself, yes, indeed, I did. The beings there that would ignore me when I was a teenager,
right,
being an intuitive empath support, were now interested in me and interested in interfacing with me, and did so.
How so?
One-on-one, they would interface telepathically.
Would it be about personal issues? Was it about you personally, or was it about, you know, the news back on planet Earth? You know, what was that like?
Well, it was generally about, they were communicating what they are contributing to this grand experiment, or the 22, whatever, if they're a part of one of these 22 experiments or ongoing programs, they would try to interface and give a hard sell about what they're contributing to humanity or the great experiment. But there were some incidents to where they did pick up on some, I guess, personal thoughts and communicated on that level.
That's interesting. Did you feel, I want to actually get back to a personal thought. I'm sure they found that interesting. So don't let my mind get away from that. Did you ever feel threatened? Did you ever feel like it was a negative atmosphere? I hate to go to the two key words, benevolent, you know, but how did you feel the overall atmosphere was? Was it positive? Was it negative? Did you feel dread? Did you feel okay?
Okay, there was a big difference for when I was with the secret Earth government syndicates and groups as an intuitive empath. There was an obvious feeling of they did not want us there, of disdain, I guess you would say, towards us. But when I was there under a different capacity, there was no angst, anxiety, or negative feelings, or feelings of what you would consider hatred or negativity at all.
When we hear from, and David, jump in here, if you would.
Sure.
There's almost a line in the sand out there about E.T.'s interference being a positive thing, one being a negative thing, a war being waged in between the two of them, fighting over us, not fighting over us. They're here for, you know, they want us to grow and love each other and look at each other and bring down barriers. And then there's the other part that could care less about humanity in general, that we're beneath them. What is the real message? What is really going on?
Well, I think that to try to pick somebody off the surface of Earth and then hold them in front of a group of extraterrestrials and say, this represents people on Earth, this person is Earth, you know. Well, who are you going to pick? You know, you could pick some guy from Skid Row in New York City who's missing most of his teeth and reeks of, you know, beer and puke.
Kind of like me. Yeah, that wouldn't be a good idea. I don't think I would represent Earth too well. Point taken, David. I get it.
So in saying that, I want to say, too, that there are a wide variety of extraterrestrials with a wide variety of agendas. Some of them are more trending positive, some of them are more trending negative, some of them are extremely negative. Then that's all kind of in like what you would call a fourth density category, which is the level above our own,
right,
as you progress in your universal evolution. As you get into fifth density and especially sixth density, these groups now become somebody that you're not usually going to see. And one of the things that has been really significant that I want to make sure we cover, because I see how fast we're running out of time.
Yes.
Is the arrival of these massive spheres in our solar system. And I want to point your listeners to something. Everybody's saying, David has no evidence, David has no evidence, okay? I just put up an article, so go to divinecosmos.com, DivineCosmos.com. In less than 2 hours, it's already had 1,500 Facebook likes and over 8,500 hits, okay? This article shows you the film of these spheres from NASA when they were first coming in the late 1990s, including a very dramatic little animated GIF of two spheres colliding with the sun and creating a massive coronal mass ejection immediately afterwards, which NASA says is unrelated. Okay, now, these sphere beings showed up, and it appears that we're finally dealing with somebody a lot higher than fourth density who is here to ultimately restore our planet and get rid of the bad guys and clear us from financial tyranny and free up all this classified technology. And that's really the core of what Corey seems to be doing, is acting as a delegate and a liaison on behalf of these new beings who have completely overturned the apple cart for the space program negative groups that we would call the Illuminati here on Earth.
Well, and certainly everything that you've been talking about over the last couple of years on this program and others, David, and you and I personally talking too as well about the, you know, the global financial situation, and things certainly seem to have turned upside down over the last week. And it's something I want you to come back on the show in a couple of weeks, and we need to address this directly, if you don't mind.
It's accelerating to warp drive speed.
Yes,
we had the Dow drop 530 points on Friday, and Monday morning, this morning, it dropped another 1,000 points and closed about 700 down.
Yeah, it's
this is exactly how the 2008 Lehman Brothers collapse started, and believe me, this perfectly dovetails with what Corey has been saying online and what my own insiders separate from Corey have been saying. Buckle your seatbelt, get ready, because you're going to see epic changes. And the only way we can get rid of the bad guys is to have the public get pissed off enough that they want the change. So it does appear that this is what's just starting to happen.
Corey, when was the last time that you made contact with the Avions?
That would have been the, let me see, I can look right here. It was on the 19th.
Of August?
Yes.
Did you tell them you were going to be on this show? Just kidding, just kidding. I was just wondering if they're, yeah, if they're tuning in. I'm not making light of it, by the way.
Okay? No, I know. Okay. And there is something I wanted to make clear, that the when the sphere started to appear in the solar system,
yes,
across the Pentagon and all these different groups, they all got excited. They were saying the Sumerian gods have returned. They were all excited, and they started trying to hail these spheres. They sort of tried to make contact with them. They were saying, you know, all right, you know, our Illuminati gods are here. We're ready to, you know, kick butt and take names. Well, they had a rude awakening. This group was not who they thought they were, and they were a positive group. And this group is not here to save us. They are not here to deliver us from evil. They are here to deliver us a message and to even out the playing fields, I guess you could say. And we have to take responsibility and be our own saviors.
When you okay, couple of direct questions. When you were back at sitting at the table at the Super Federation, and you had all of these, how many different races were in front of you from around the universe? Was it in the hundreds? Was it in the thousands? How many were in front of you?
Well, when I was a intuitive empath support, usually there was about 40 different groups, but sometimes there were up to 60, a little over 60.
Were one of these the Blue Avions?
No.
That's an interesting point, and you understand why I'm driving this home. That's an interesting thing. So when the Blue Avions are here, who are they representing? Are they part of the Federation now?
No. The Blue Avions have refused to meet directly with all these groups, and they've said that, and some of these groups are very positive, but they said the most positive of these groups are, they still have agendas, and they are still service to self.
Do the Blue Avions hold, are they, for lack of a better word, please understand, but are they superior in both intelligence and numbers, that they don't need the Federation and they can ignore the Federation? Are they in that? Are they in a position of power to make that kind of decision?
Absolutely. They had the ability to quarantine the entire solar system to where all of these beings that were here were now trapped in their embassies that are here on Earth, under the oceans, underground, on various moons. All of these different groups that are here were trapped. They could not leave the solar system.
Why is that? Do you know?
Well, they have erected a barrier. They call it that. It's called the, it's being referenced by the Secret Space Program as the Outer Barrier. And it is out way past the Oort cloud and out, it's very far out there. And it is a barrier that does not allow, any beings or craft to enter or leave the solar system. They basically wanted to make sure that every group that has interfered and with the affairs of humanity were going to be here at the end of what they're calling some great cycle, so that they would be held accountable and, I guess...
Okay. I understand.
Okay.
Now, the time period that I've heard you reference before has been around 250,000 years, these 22... DNA interferences and experiments that have been going on reach back. Is that the right number? 250,000 years? Was that the first experiment here on Earth? Was it 250,000 years ago?
I believe it was like 340,000 years ago or something. Of that nature.
Well, that's an interesting number, and David knows why, too. You have not only the stories of the Anunnaki and Sumerian culture and Egyptian culture going back some instances, hundreds of thousands of years, 400,000 years, 300,000 years, but certainly man himself, you, me, David, our audience, became who we are today about 150,000 to it. We just appeared out of nowhere, and I don't see this as being a coincidence. Now, am I on the right track with that thinking?
Absolutely.
David?
Sure. There is more and more evidence actually available to the public about the mitochondrial Eve and the DNA Adam both popping up 250,000 years ago, almost at the same time. And they're not explaining why this is, but there are a whole bunch of breadcrumbs that are being put out there right now. And another thing that I really want to add here is that the Cabal is planning on actually giving us a form of disclosure which will probably reveal Anunnaki and things like this in a much more public way as a sort of last-ditch effort to try to save their butts when it really gets hot and heavy for them, which is happening soon. And so there is a whole through line of data where they're putting out these things into the world, like saying that there's a pyramid on the Ceres asteroid in the asteroid belt around Jupiter.
Right.
A pyramid that's glowing. Okay, a glowing pyramid, and that was announced by NASA. They announced that Mars had oceans that were 2 miles deep across half of its surface. Okay, this is not stuff that I'm making up. These are NASA press releases, and they are getting us ready, according to what Corey's sources have said, for a sort of controlled hangout of disclosure where they're going to announce what they call the ancient builder race, which is a group that's very ancient, hundreds of millions of years old, that came through our solar system and built a whole lot of structures all throughout the solar system, inside moons, on the surface, and inside planets, and also cities inside the Earth that are still there, that have been reoccupied, that people are living in now.
Are they going to do it, David, with or Corey, Are they going to do it with an announcement? Are they going to bring forth some hard evidence, like Sumerian tablets or Anunnaki mythos or things from the past on our own planet? How do they plan to do that? Because we can't take things at face value anymore when it comes from getting knowledge, any mass media announcement.
Let me just take a stab at that, and then Corey can kick in what he wants. This is something where you got to remember, I have a lot more contacts than just the ones that Corey has. And so I'm combining all this different stuff together.
Sure.
We're hearing that there are multiple plans in place for how they could do disclosure. They have not committed to any one plan. For example, they've got the idea that there is a whale-type creature on Saturn's moon Titan, and they've put that out there. They've got the water on Mars and particular ruins on Mars they could bring out. They've got the spots on Ceres they could bring out. They've got a jet black object orbiting Pluto that appears to be a moon, but its moons aren't black. They could bring that one out. And I just watched Man of Steel again last night, the superhero flick, and I couldn't believe it, because one of the plans I heard they might do is openly showing us a UFO coming in from outside the solar system and making it definitive and just putting it all over the airwaves. And that's exactly what happens in Man of Steel. It freaked me out when I saw that again after what I now know.
Yeah,
that's predictive programming. They're setting us up for it.
Sure, sure. Transformers or whatever. You know, any one of those films is warming us up for that.
Absolutely.
Corey, how do you think they're going to do it?
Well, I was actually...
Well, actually, Corey, I asked you the wrong question. Not how do you think you're going to... You know, how do you know that they are going to do it? What evidence do you have?
Well, I was brought to a meeting with I guess I would call him a peer. His pseudonym is Lieutenant Colonel Gonzalez. I have to be careful because I almost always say his real name.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah,
it would not be good. We were brought to it was a large meeting in Europe that this group called the Committee of 200 was at, and they were negotiating, they were wanting us to negotiate on their behalf a partial disclosure to where certain technologies such as certain free energy and other health and medical technologies would be released, the existence of extraterrestrials and the fact that they've been interacting with us would be released. But all of the evidence that has been gathered about the different ET groups and the cabal or secret Earth government syndicates' crimes against humanity would be put on the back burner for another 50 years. And, to kind of kick the can and save their butts from tribunals and that kind of thing. So that was one of their latest negotiations. And what they're trying to do is they want to do I announced this several months ago, that there's going to be a huge disinformation battle and a battle over the control over the narrative of disclosure. And as David said, there are several, they have several different bullets that they can load in the chamber. And it's all, which bullet they load in the chamber is going to depend on how things fall in the public, on you know, what kind of information surfaces, what happens, and what bullet they think is going to be the magic bullet that is going to buy them more time.
Is it going to be through the United Nations?
That is where they most likely would. It would most likely be a United Nations announcement with representatives from major religions in accompaniment with them.
Now, I'm just imagining here, is that type of disclosure, and I would imagine it being at the United Nations, if that type of disclosure goes down, are they going to parade E.T. up on stage and stand behind, you know, the head of the United Nations or stand behind Obama? Or is this going to be spoken and without anything like that happening?
Well, there's several different scenarios have been all these different arrows have been put in the quiver.
Sure.
So, you know, there's all these different possibilities, and they're ready to play any card. But what they're trying to stave off and prevent is a full disclosure event. And a full disclosure event is, you know, people think of disclosure and they think of, okay, someone's going to come and they're finally going to say, yes, there are aliens. Okay, we have disclosure. No. Full disclosure is everything. We find out our true history, not this manipulated history that the mainstream has been brainwashed with. We're going to find out about all of these crazy crimes against humanity that I've given a little bit of information about. That includes a galactic slave trade of these cabal groups trading off human beings as commodities in a barter system with some of these negative ET groups in exchange for technologies and other biological specimens in trade for their studies.
Yeah, let me jump in right there, because when you suggest something like that, the normal reaction is today's technology, you know, what the advancements that we have made in the last 50 years or 100 years. But were they doing these types of barter deals? Did they do it 5,000 years ago for fire? Did they do it 2,000 years ago for the wheel? You know, and I'm not being facetious here. Did they do a trade for the Gutenberg printing press?
Well, no, I can answer that. We were pretty much at their mercy. They could come and go as they wished. There were certain groups that took, responsibility at different times. There were different ET groups did take guardianship over the planet and, protect its resources in certain ways when back in the ancient past, when we were considered their property, or they considered us their property. As things went along and we started getting more sophisticated, and realize when there were some alien crashes and the military industrial complex and all these different groups started making contact with them, they made agreements with them. Hey, you can abduct and experiment on human beings. Give us a list of who you're abducting and give us some toys and trinkets and it'll all be good, you know, and we can't stop you anyway, so we might as well get something out of it. Well, after they developed a secret space program and the ability to police our biosphere to a certain degree, then the these people controlling the secret space programs at that time, which were these cabal groups, they decided, hey, human beings are a commodity. These groups out there want them, want these people, obviously. They're a bunch of useless eaters in our book anyway. We can control who disappears and who doesn't. And then this slave trade was born. The humans started, just like as disgusting as the slave trade was back in, you know, just going back our entire history of us enslaving each other, we started abducting our own people, taking them off planet, and trading them to ET groups in exchange for the, I guess, goods and services that we wanted. And at that point, we were able to control the environment and control who was taken or who was traded off. And instead of people just being abducted and us having no idea what was going on. Does that make sense?
Yeah. What would they be using us for? You know, when I'm picturing us working in mines, I have no idea. What is it that they would be using us for?
Well, that's very good. Well, it's not very good, but that most people, the first thing they jump to is they're eating us, which, you know, but human beings, and this sounds strange to some people, we have become very well known for our engineering abilities and our abilities to build and our labor abilities. So, yes, the slave labor, working in mines, building things, that kind of stuff. That's one thing. Another thing is our genetics. We have been genetically manipulated and engineered so much.
Go ahead. We're just up against a break. Go ahead and finish.
Well, let's wait till after the break.
Okay. Okay. Very good. This is Fade to Black tonight. David Wilcock and Corey Good. Okay, Corey. Corey and David. Before we run out of time, let's get to some brass tacks here, really quick. What is it that we can expect? And not only do we have over the next month, before I say the month or two, October's coming up. A lot of stuff going down in October, lots of theories and rumors and stuff flying around in the internet about the month of October. So what is it that we can expect? And is it a warning, or is this something that we can deal with?
Jimmy, I want to jump in quickly and create a through line to where Corey was going before and didn't finish.
Sure.
Because it's all related.
Yes, you do it.
When these ETs zap our DNA with certain energy fields that our sun is starting to produce, that DNA gives them superpowers that they would not normally have. And that's a very important point. Corey, you want to say more from there?
Well, but where I was going with the slave trade was, that we have been genetically modified so many times that our genes pretty much reach out to be spliced with other species, and so we're very easy to genetically splice with their own genetics. And we also are very different because we have a wider band of emotions than most of them do. And that's one of the, it's a blessing and a curse. You can see what we've been doing with them, the big mess we have down here.
Mm-hmm.
We haven't learned to control them, but our emotions are a catalyst to controlling our mass co-creative consciousness. And this goes off on a whole other level of the grand experiment that they're a lot of them are interested in.
Well, I have to, okay, since we're back on this, then the questions are direct. Number one, when they're altering DNA, they're not necessarily altering us physically. Is it a mental what is it that they're altering?
Well, they're altering they all are directly altering our DNA, and there are out of these 22 different experiments, there was one they were this one they wanted to keep this experiment going. They had the DNA programmed thousands of years ago to slowly unfold in a certain way, and they wanted their program to unfold and us to progress a certain way. And other groups wanted to come in and manipulate us to to change us in a quicker way or in a different way. So these are 22 competing, kind of like competing theses that you would see in college theses.
Well, Corey, when you say that they did that, what was the instructions that were put into our DNA? What was the program that was later altered in a competing experiment? What was it that they were programming into our DNA specifically?
Basically, what it all comes down to, the grand experiment is about the evolution of consciousness, and it is basically a giant experiment in consciousness and awareness. And a lot of these groups that are higher density groups, they are trying to progress to a point to where they head to where they can evolve back to source or to the source field, using David's book of where they came from. And us on the lower density part of the spectrum are kind of like a parachute that's holding them back.
When you do an experiment, you are trying to get to an end result. What's the end game with the grand experiment? Is it communication? Is it for us to get what is the what is it that they are trying to achieve?
Well, we have competing agendas in this experiment, but the overall grand experiment is bigger than us. It is bigger than these ET groups. It is it's on a spiritual and consciousness level. It is a spiritual consciousness evolution level, and it is not just of a genetic nature. Genetics is just fine-tuning the hardware to be able to run upgraded software. And the consciousness, our consciousness and our mind, our spirit complex and all that is the software, in the analogy. And in the physical realm, the genetics and our bodies are the hardware. Just, like you hear people say, we're not physical, we're spiritual beings having a physical experience. We're not physical beings having a spiritual experience.
So that's what they're trying to achieve in the experiment, is they want us to be a physical being with a spiritual experience. Is that the end result? Will they be happy if that's what is achieved? Am I understanding correctly?
In the end, the all of these groups know that the physical spectrum is left behind and you go to a pure energy state. So we're in the early stages of one part of the experiment. They're in the latter stages of this grand experiment, and there are other beings that are much further along in this grand experiment. So there's this experiment is wider in scope and spectrum than most people have even begun to try to wrap their minds around. And I don't even know if it's possible for us in our current understanding to wrap our minds around. And that's not a slight on humanity. That is just, we're doing our best to try to make sense of this overall grand experiment that we are just a very small part of, and that these beings that our ancestors would have called gods, they are a small part of, and they are just one level above us on this spectrum, and there's levels above them.
Where did the blue avians come from? Have they told you?
They are from their... I've asked them, where do you go when you're not here? And they have communicated that they go back to their density, their reality. And it's not a planet orbiting at the center of the galaxy. They don't use spaceships. These giant spheres are not ships that they inhabit. They are almost of what some would call like in the angelic realm. They're of the higher density spectrum. And
well, when you see them, they're physical,
right? They take a physical appearance. They consciously appear and in a physical form here.
Is it a physical form that they want us to see, or is this actually what they look like? Is this, or is this something that doesn't offend us and freak us out, and, you know, we don't lose our minds when we see them, so to speak?
You know, I don't know what they originally look like. They are pure. They come from pure energy, and they're presenting themselves in this form for, I'm sure, a reason. I don't know what that reason is.
You know what? I don't want to sound trite here, but do they eat?
No.
They don't eat.
They don't go to the bathroom. They don't. You know, they exist on another plane, on a higher plane, a pure energy plane.
Who else have they made themselves visible to here on Earth? Are you it, or are there others? Are there more Corey Goods out there?
No, well, there's no more Corey Goods out there, I hope. But they're, Gonzalez, they have been... meeting with him at almost exactly the same time period that they started appearing to me. And there are other people that have not come forward that have been in physical contact. They do not communicate through channeling. They communicate with you first through dreams, and if you accept their invitation to communicate than they appear to you in physical form. And they have a protocol that they use in introducing themselves to you. And
do they know about David?
Oh yeah.
And what do they think about what do they think about David?
Well, I was instructed to keep working with David because he had a lot of understanding of things that I didn't. It appears that he has been in some sort of contact with this group.
Hold on. Hey, David, you can't type on the keyboard.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah, somebody's typing.
that was me.
Okay. Are they cool with David and his approach and the way that he speaks to everybody? Or would they tell you maybe you need to run through somebody else?
Well, they have told me that at times that I needed to work with different people to help get the message out. That's why I started working with Dr. Sala. Dr. Sala, just like David, showed a very keen intellect and also, you know, vetted me and has been...
Dr. Sala of Exopolitics, right?
Yeah, Dr. Michael Sala.
Yes.
Dr. Michael Sala and David are the two main people that I've really trusted working with, and because you know they're neutral and they have a lot of complementing knowledge and experience, and all the information from David's books, all of the research he's done has come in extremely handy. There has been information that they have communicated to me, and I don't fully understand the full ramifications of, and I will tell David this is what they communicated, and because of his studies of the not only the Law of One, some other materials, and all of his, prep work for his two books has put him in a place to where he has a lot of the scientific understanding and a good foundation to help disseminate this information in a responsible way.
Have they ever asked to speak to David directly? Or David, have they spoken to you directly?
I've been talking to him for 20 years. That's part of why I'm where I am in this thing.
And yeah. So back to Corey, have they ever said to you, okay, we need to talk to David? Do they ever use you as a conduit to get to David?
Or is I've delivered messages to David, and a lot of times it's of a personal nature. A lot of the information, like Gonzalez, a lot of the communications that happened between me and or the Blue Avians and myself, a lot of it can be of a very personal nature of, you know, I'm not being forgiving or loving enough. I'm allowing certain people out there, trolls or certain people, to affect me emotionally and get me off of a path that I should be on. I should, or I am talking about to people about they need to be on a high vibration diet, and I'm eating donuts.
Yeah, you know, I hear you there. Well, any negative, anything negative out there, whatever it is, it doesn't even matter. Ignore it. Because if you at any point, and David will certainly share this advice too, as soon as you open your eyes and you read or hear something negative, you open up your ears, now you've got baggage hanging off of you. And you're trying to think about how to respond to something negative.
You're very correct.
Yep. And now you've been steered off of the road, and somebody has won. Yeah, ignore all of that crap. Yeah, don't.
And David's been doing this for a long time, and you've been doing this for a long time. And a lot of this is very new to me, and a lot of the very personal attacks, very obvious disinformation, and all kinds of stuff that happens. It's hard. It was hard for me not to take personally, but you know. I was, and it was starting to affect what I was supposed to be doing, and you know, I was taken aside and talked to, and it's been a growth process for me spiritually and emotionally, and you know, because we're all basically spiritual and emotional children. Even the wisest of us, and we've you know this has been the last 4 or 5 months has been a crash course in not only how different researchers and the public how they receive and react to information for me. It's been a crash course, but it's also been a growing experience. And I'm not really a preacher, but you know, we talked earlier about you got to practice what you preach.
Yeah, that's right.
And if I'm out talking about you've got to be more loving and forgiving, and I'm holding these grudges.
No, you've got to be more loving and forgiving. That's it.
Yeah, I'm setting myself up for some karmic road bumps.
That's exactly right. Let me ask you this, Corey, and we're going to be okay. This is what we're going to do, David and Corey. I'm going to ask you one more question in 5 minutes at the bottom of the hour. One last break. When we come back, I have got a whole load of questions that have come in. During the show, and we'll get to all of those, and those will be really fast. Bang, 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 bang. We'll just fly through those. Now, how does the communication happen? In other words, after this show ends, right, in the next half hour, can you make contact and tell them about this show, for instance? I'm not saying that because of ego. I'm just saying, could that communication happen that quickly and that easily?
They're extremely aware of what's going on, so I don't have to tell them anything. There have been so many times to when I've been brought before them, and then I start to give them a report, and a hand goes up. They already know. They already know it all, and they begin to communicate with me telepathically.
So how does that happen? Do you have to, tell me, how does it happen? Are you asleep? Are you awake? Is it the middle of the day? Is it as easy as picking up a cell phone? You know, how does the communication happen? How do you initiate it?
Well, I don't have to initiate communication. I wouldn't call them omniscient, but they are aware. I mean, if I have something going on and I need to communicate with them, they establish communication.
That's interesting. And can you tell, and just let me enjoy this. I want to live this through you. Okay, so please tell me, is it a feeling that happens? Do you know it's about to happen? Does the temperature change in the room? Do you change physically? You know, do you know what's about to happen?
Well, it's happened. There's in several different ways. Usually, after I have a meeting with the Secret Space Program Alliance Council, I will then go meet with them afterwards. And Gonzalez will contact me and let me know when one of those meetings is going to occur. So then I know that I'm about to have a meeting with the blue avians. I've been sitting here in my living room, and they'll appear in the living room. And I'll be sitting here with my dog, and, you know, my dog just kind of jumps, and I look, and there one is. And that actually just happened the one time here in my living room. But there, one of the beings is an actual orb being, and an orb, usually the size of a golf ball to a size of a baseball, will zip through my wall or through my ceiling and start zigzagging through the room. And at that point, I'll stand up, get dressed, or you know, depending on the situation, and indicate mentally that I'm ready. And then this sphere, little orb, comes and stops about 18 inches from my chest. And then in the blink of an eye, it expands to where I'm inside of it. And I am floating directly in the middle inside of it. And then, now at its new enlarged size, it will shoot through the ceiling, and instantaneously I will be in one of the giant spheres out in space, where I will meet either one or three of the blue avians.
What do you see, Corey? We've got about 1 minute before we hit the break. What is it that you see when that happens? Do you see Earth disappear, and, you know, at your
no.
feet? Are you watching? Can you see the stars?
No. Well, when I'm in the sphere, I can. But when I'm picked up in the little orb, when it takes off, there is this feeling of time and space kind of smearing, kind of a real quick smear kind of that's the best way I can describe it. It just lasts for a split second, and then I'm there.
Motion sickness? Do you have any pain in your body, anything like that?
A slight bit of motion. It's a very split second of motion. In that blur of a second, you feel this. You feel like you're being smeared. You know, like you draw off a pencil and you brush your hand across it, how it smears.
I got smeared on Saturday in Glendale, but that's a whole nother story. hey guys, let's take a break. Let's do it. And then when we come back, we've got a boatload of questions, and they are all good. This is Fade to Black, and I'm your host, Jimmy Church. I almost said I've lost audio. Hey, David, tonight our audio's been good, brother.
I'm happy for that.
Yeah, they left us alone. This is Fade to Black. Corey
so
Good.
Fun.
Yeah, right. Corey Good and David Wilcock. We'll be back right after this. Stay with us. I'm going to go to Twitter and email, and I'm going to get through as many questions as I can in the next few minutes. Guys, are you still there?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
I'm going to do these at random in no particular order. Ask Corey about the body drop-off. Where are they coming from? What is that, Corey?
It's one of the more disturbing aspects. There are what are known as body drops that occur. A lot of them are in national parks and other isolated areas. A lot of park rangers know about this. A lot of these are federal employees that are deferred to these areas, but there are areas that different ET groups that come in and abduct human beings. There are that have experiments that go wrong or utilize different parts of human beings for different things, and the humans perish. They drop the bodies. It's a dumping, like dumping areas where they dump, like what a serial killer would do. These are areas that are seem to be used by different groups, but they're common areas spread out across the planet, and a lot of the times these bodies are dropped from high altitude. The federal agencies, they go in there, they investigate it, keep it quiet, clean up the situation, and then they do not inform the families of that they found bodies, and they do not return the bodies back to the families.
That's totally disturbing.
Yes, it is.
This is from email. Based on your experiences and your knowledge, what needs to happen before ETs are here on Earth openly interacting publicly? Is there something that we need to do? Is there a next step?
Well, first, there's going to have to be a full disclosure event that's going to involve a massive data dump with all kinds of information, like Edward Snowden and all of these super hacks that have occurred recently, where lots of data has been gathered about crimes against humanity. We're going to have to get through all of these dark parts of our past before we can move forward. And there's going to be some darkness ahead before we see the light at the end of the tunnel. And there's going to be some upsetting and disturbing information to come out that we're going to have to deal with as a collective group.
Ask Corey about what kinds of human-like ETs that you have seen.
The human-like groups in this Federation group, there was the one that I've talked about. When I say olive green, I mean green, and they look like olive green colored, with jet black hair beings. There's beings with just about every skin color you can think of pastels of and sizes. There's this one that has been referred to as the Shining Ones, that they have white glistening skin, almost as if they have some liquid on their skin, and they have their hair looks like cotton. It's white, and their eyes are red and emanate a light. They emanate some sort of luminescence.
But they look totally human, 10 fingers, 10 toes. Same
right.
Body structure, just totally different
color.
So they couldn't. They couldn't.
Different sizes.
They couldn't walk down a street in Dallas.
No, not these. No,
I got you.
But there are some groups that look so similar that they could walk around amongst us, and you would think that they are just odd-looking humans, and unless you just really most people are so caught up in their own world, they probably wouldn't even notice them.
And is that going on right now, today?
Well, yes. One of the programs I was involved in was an intercept and interrogation program, to where the secret space programs were intercepting beings that were integrating into human society and pretending to be us as part of their own experiments. And they were here not unauthorized, and they were being picked up and taken and interrogated.
This question is for David. David, Bob Dean said 2 years ago that some really special, weird secret happened in Mexico. Do you know anything about this?
No.
Okay, moving on. For Corey, yeah, this is like the speed round. Bam, bam, bam. For Corey, what happened to the family on Mars? Were they ever rescued? I remember that. Were they ever rescued?
No.
Okay, wow. Okay, lightning answers with lightning questions. Let's see. I'm reading these in real time, so just stay with me. What is currently happening is letting disclosure get into the minds of the awakened. So, when the data dump happens, how can we assist?
Well, one of the things that's pretty much been communicated to me through the Secret Space Program Alliance is that there's going to be, it's going to take some major events like a major global economic meltdown, and then people to get extremely ticked off and realize that there's been a giant Ponzi scheme from a giant criminal organization that has caused this to happen. And then they're going to be open to receiving more information about these groups. And then at that point, there will be these large data dumps of all of this information, of all these crimes against humanity they've done. And also having to do with the extraterrestrial part of the equation. And at that point, all of the sleeping masses are going to be heading to get as much Xanax as they can. And they're going to be, freaking out and dealing with it cold turkey. And those of us who have, no matter what our belief system is within the ufology, we are more awakened and...
Ooh, I think I just lost Corey. Corey,
I'm still here.
Ed, David, I think we lost Corey.
That sucks.
And hold on here. That was bizarre. That was mid-sentence, too.
I think he's on a Bluetooth headset, and it's possible that since he just bought it, it might have run out of battery, so he might need to charge it.
Okay. Let's see here. Corey, are you there? Okay. I think he can hear us. Hey, Corey, are you there?
Can you hear me?
Okay, now we got you. Okay.
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 Sorry.
That's quite all right. Where were we, or should we move on to another question?
I forgot where I was.
Very good. And let's just move on. Ask Corey about the black goo.
Mm. Yeah, the black goo is something that I saw studied on the research vessel and also read about in the smart glass pad. They would run high EM fields over it and magnetic fields, and it kind of like metal particles would pop up out of it. And what it is a artificial intelligence nanite technology.
And what would it? Okay, what would it be used for?
It apparently it was taken by another extraterrestrial group at some point and put either, this is me remembering 20 years ago reading off this smart glass pad, it was put under the ocean or somewhere to keep it dormant, but it is invasive to biological beings such as ourselves. It would get in through your pores or your eyes, ears, nose, and mouth, and compromise your first your cellular structure, and then your mind, and basically take you over.
For David, what do the blue avians expect from those who are bestowed with superhuman abilities?
That hasn't happened yet. The ascension thing that this all seems to be leading up to did happen 160,000 times in Tibet, documented. So those people transitioned into a rainbow body, as it's called, and gave up their physical bodies. It appears that since if you hit our DNA with this energy, that the people that then splice that DNA into their bodies, these ETs, will get superpowers, but that is also going to happen to us. And one of the things that I've heard from other insiders that Corey has confirmed is that many of the negative ETs are extremely terrified about us successfully going through this quantum leap in our evolution, because we will become much more powerful than they are. And the irony is that people online who tend to be the critics and the haters, they think that the way we're going to solve this problem with the cabal is by aiming a gun at them and shooting them. But look, they're already too powerful for any successful resistance of a violent nature to ever exist. You cannot shoot them. You cannot blow them up. This is a spiritual problem with a spiritual solution. The real power that we have is in the meditation effect, which is documented. 7,000 people get together, meditate under one roof, and the global crime and terrorism index decreases by 72%. Now, the negative groups, the cabal, uses this power against us by doing what they call imagination will. They seed the imagination with the thought forms of what they want to create, and then they fire those thought forms with false flag terrorism and deliberate provocations to then try to steer us into what they've helped us to visualize. So one of the obvious examples is there's, God knows, 200, 300 Hollywood blockbusters about alien invasion, hardly any positive ET movies. What are they doing? They were planning on using these assets they have in the solar system to stage a mock alien invasion as a pretext for global martial law and control. And the good guy ETs have stopped them from doing this and are making sure that we will continue to be awakened globally at a speed that we can handle, with the eventual goal of us awakening these dormant potentials that are stored in our DNA. And once those dormant potentials awaken, we will have telekinesis, telepathy, levitation, time travel, materialization, all of this stuff that seems like the greatest miracles that you read Jesus doing in the Bible.
Right.
John 14:12, Jesus said, "As I do these things, so shall you do them, and greater things."
Right.
So that is apparently what is coming our way.
Is the, you know, when you have the cabal and the Illuminati, the New World Order, all of that full of hate and no morals, right? That's what drives them. Is that the ultimate weapon against them? Is, you know, I hate to be so naive, but is it love and holding hands and running through the forest throwing flowers at each other? Is
well, not exactly,
but you understand what,
yeah,
I'm saying.
Sure. What one of the things that I have learned about initiation. And initiation is a process that leads to spiritual enlightenment. And I am not enlightened, but I am certainly a student of enlightenment. And I practice enlightenment in my life and try to aspire to greater enlightenment. That initiation process, for me, has involved facing the most terrifying, terrifying fear over and over and over and over again, day after day, week after week, month after month, year after year, fear shoved in my face. And I had dreams where this weird lady that had like a turban on and, you know, all this funny flowing sashes and crystal ball is shoving a snake, a poisonous snake in my face and actually shoving the snake against my skin and said, "We're going to keep doing this until you're no longer afraid of this snake." And I was, you know, shaking with fear. And what I can say is that enlightenment is not just about being Mr. Rogers and holding hands and singing Kumbaya. If you are an enlightened being, which again, I'm not saying that I am, I have a lot of work to do. When you get to that point, none of the negative emotions affect you. You can be offered a situation that would normally cause people fear and you will not feel afraid. You be offered a situation that will make people angry, you do not feel anger. You will be offered a situation that makes people sad, you do not feel sadness. What happens is you stay in a balanced, loving, and peaceful place. How does that integrate with standing up to something like what they call the Illuminati? A lot of people call it the Illuminati. We are not saying that the Illuminati should just roll us over and we're going to be, you know, cannon fodder and wheels under the tank. But we're saying healthy boundaries. You don't want to hate them. You don't want to treat them as if they were despicable slime that is not worthy of your love and appreciation. Ultimately, we're all from the same source. We're all from one mind. That is true. And each of us holographically in our own lives are being given challenges today. You probably had one happen today. You listening, I'm talking to you personally now. Mm-hmm. You probably had something today happen to you where you had to stand up to negativity in your own life, draw boundaries, and say, enough is enough. I am not going to let you do this anymore. And the key is to do that lovingly and with respect for the person who you are drawing the boundaries with. And that's what we have to do as a planet. So that's a very big difference from just saying that we're going to hum this away.
Are you, both of you, and we'll go ahead and wrap on this. Two questions. One, when is the ascension with the WaveX? One. And two, are either of you scared?
Well, the WaveX, there's constantly energy coming from the center of the galaxy. And what is occurring now is our local star cluster and solar system is moving into a part of the galaxy, this giant torsion field that is our galaxy. We are rotating into a part of our galaxy that is of a higher energy, and there are high energy clouds that we've observed and have been reported in the news since the 70s going back that we are heading into. So it's not just this giant wet.
Jimmy, you're not supposed to do bonkets on the air, buddy.
You caught that?
Not just this giant X wave coming from the center of the galaxy. There are other aspects to this. And, you know, there are things that I battle with that, you know, do cause fear. But it's not whether you are afraid or not. It's what you do with that fear and how you overcome that fear. And succumbing to fear is a problem. You grow through adversity, and if you confront your fears and you overcome your fears, then you grow.
David, are you scared?
You know what? If I die, I die. And I like to quote Abraham Lincoln in saying, I would rather die once at the hands of an assassin than die every day in fear of assassination. So you know what? Come and get me. I'm ready. You guys want to take me out? Take me out. I don't need to be here. I'm just doing this because it's my job and I'm supposed to be here. These higher beings want me to keep doing this with all the crap that we have to go through. They're going to keep me here. But I'm also fully in acceptance of leaving. I don't need to be here. You know, and people online, they do not understand these haters. Oh, David is making money. Look at this, okay?
Hey, David. Hey, David. Let's address that. You know what's really funny? Because I got a few emails about this, too, leading up to this show over the past week. Check this out. Hey, David, have I paid you to come on this show?
No, dude.
Have you paid me so you could come on this show? No.
Jesus Christ, no.
Exactly. And when people say those kinds of things, they just don't get it. You know, when I see the comments out there, you know, David does these huge seminars. David isn't driving a Lamborghini. When they say that about us or this show or people, authors that are out there writing books and stuff, that is not the case. And those are people that are just saying stuff because, David, you matter. Corey, because you matter. And never forget that. That negative vibe out there is there to bring you down. And
even working in Ancient Aliens, when I first started, in the first few seasons I did that show, the pay was so small that it was basically me giving it to them for free. And even now, if I told you the number, it is so low that people would literally laugh in my face and think I must be lying.
Yeah, yeah. And you don't need to tell me because you know I know. Yep. So, yeah, and you're absolutely right. All of that stuff is done because you want to share information. It is not there because you need to pay your mortgage. And people need to really, really understand that and come to grips with that because they just don't get it. And that kind of negativity we all put up with. So there you go. Let's just put that to bed right now. Hey, guys, I had fun. How are you guys doing? You good?
I'm feeling good,
yeah.
Jimmy.
Yeah, I'm feeling kind of clean.
I would like to mention that there is so much more that we're covering on the Gaia series that we're doing. The first two episodes are free. People can go and watch. As a matter of fact, they've got if you go to blueavians.com, it will send you to a link that you can watch the first two episodes. If you do decide to sign up and watch the other episodes, I mean, we get just a very tiny little bit for every person that signs up. I mean, it's just a tiny little bit. We were speaking about making money. You know, as long as we're living under this Babylonian money magic system, and you have a family to feed, and you've given up a six-figure salary, you got to find a way to feed, you know, your kids a little bit. You know, no one's getting rich here, and no one's even getting comfortable here. So,
it's about spreading the word and information. That's what it's about.
Let me just say a couple things too. First of all, the spelling of that is blueavians.com. And the show with Corey, I think we're up to 7 or 8 episodes now that people can watch. We also have, there's 2 episodes of George Norrie now up interviewing Corey, or there's going to be the second one tomorrow, I guess, or whenever, about the MyLab program and about the intergalactic slave trade, which is extremely fascinating, highly recommended. And there's over 130 episodes of my own show where I talk extensively about the scientific data that proves all this stuff. All the people that say I have no evidence obviously are not watching that show. And all that's available under the one price that everybody pays. And it is basically, for both Corey and me, it's our sole source of income. and we make enough to pay our basic bills and have food, but that's about it.
Hey, thank you, guys. All of the links are at jimmychurchradio.com. Everything is up in Twitter, Divine Cosmos and blueavions.com. Thank you so much, guys. I can't wait for part two.
Thank you, Jimmy. Appreciate it.
Have a great rest of your evening. Hey, David, we got dinner next week. Don't forget. I'll talk to you guys.
How much did you pay me for that?
Jerry's Deli, brother. I'll talk to you guys.
All right.
Have a good night.
Later.